Blog Talk Radio.
We are the heirs of that first revolution.
Will a strong and united America still be a force for freedom and prosperity around the world?
America has created the longest peacetime economic expansion in our history.
We are the heirs of that first revolution.
Good common sense and sound judgment of the American people. And their essential love of justice.
Hi, welcome to the Kudzu Vine. It is December 20th, 2015. I'm your host, David McLaughlin. Join me as always. Welcome, Catherine Smith.
Happy holidays from Atlanta.
I thought you'd gone somewhere, Catherine. I was a little worried. Well, happy
I'm
holidays
here.
To you. Welcome, Tim Shiflett.
Good evening, sir.
Good to have y'all both. And about halfway through the show, joining us from Arkansas, Mr. Drew Pritt. He's going to come talk to us about all kind of Arkansas politics. Of course, we got two presidential candidates. We have a Senate race, a congressional races, and who knows what else is going on in Arkansas. But Drew will be here to tell us about that. And in the meantime, we're just going to talk a little politics. And things got kind of exciting. They actually hooked me in to watch a debate. Usually I read about the debates afterward, but, you know, people breaking into others' data and people suing people. And, I mean, it was like, you know, soap opera, pro wrestling, everything put into one. They hooked me in, and it wasn't much of a payoff for that. I'm still glad I watched it, being a good citizen, being a good Democrat, need to watch these things. But I didn't get the, you know, the I guess what was on Fox on the cage fighting on UFC. I didn't get any of that. But, Tim, you watched the debate. What were some of your takeaways?
Yeah, first of all, sounded like you were doing an intro for the Republicans. But anyway, enjoyable. I've noticed that the Democratic debates seem to be a little more policy-driven than the GOP debates, which seem to focus more on the personalities because, I guess, of you know, who's leading in the polls on each side. Also, as I mentioned to you before we came on the air, I wish that they would air these sometimes, besides on a Saturday night, it's a weekend, viewership is low, and, you know, that was the last one last night, I believe, and nothing major, of course, no major gaffes or anything, nothing major happened to change the dynamics of the race in any meaningful way, and as you thought what might be a cage match turned out not to be much of anything.
Yes.
So that was pretty much it for me, but I enjoyed it. It's very informative, and there's three good candidates standing up there talking.
Yeah, Catherine, what were some of your takeaways?
Well, I watched it. You know, I tend to watch them. If I'm around, I'll watch it. I was expecting a little more fireworks because of the whole data breach thing, which I know we're going to talk about in a little bit. But the one thing that I did notice that I found that Martin O'Malley seemed a little bit defensive and a little more not quite as comfortable as he has been in the past. I don't know if that's because, you know, his poll numbers are pretty awfully weak. But I was surprised by that, just because usually he's very natural and comfortable, and he seemed a little less so last night. But, you know, like Tim, I thought, you know, there wasn't really nothing really to write home about. But they are very – all three of them are very capable, and it's nice to see three people from our party who all three would make perfectly suitable presidents. I think they would all bring different things to the office, but I think they'd all be really good presidents. All three of them would be really good presidents. So that's a nice change from the other side.
Yeah, I think Martin O'Malley's problem is no one's giving him any attention. Early in the debate, he was like, oh, let me say something in there. And one of the moderators was like, we didn't ask you a question. You just settle down there. And you know, it's almost like there's a college football game day show that comes on every Sunday, and people bring these crazy signs just to get attention. At times, it's almost like Martin O'Malley needs to just make, you know, crazy signs up and hold them up behind the other two candidates so he can get any attention, which is kind of sad given the guy's been a sitting governor. I mean, he's a competent politician, and it's just kind of like Hillary Clinton's the front runner. There has to be somebody besides her, and whoever have picked Bernie Sanders, and there's no room for you, which, you know, you look at the other side with their 15 candidates or whatever they're still up to. Three candidates doesn't seem like it would be too many, but the way they've structured things, it comes off that way. Martin O'Malley actually got jeered at one point when he kind of talked about trying to say we shouldn't look at the Cold War and regarding the way we look at the Middle East, which I don't know that anyone's really doing that, but he kind of did a generational thing, and he got jeered. I don't think people appreciated it because really when you look at him, he doesn't look that much younger than Hillary Clinton. And so it came off not real good for him. One thing I did notice is Hillary Clinton, she had a overarching message, and it came through. Part of it was just verbatim, this is what she said, and part of it was implied. It was, all the three of us are better than all of the 15, 16 Republicans, two Democrats. So now what we have to do is figure out who has the best chance to defeat the Republicans. That's me. That's why I should win. And she said the first half of that, you know, verbatim. I think the second half was supposed to be implied. Tim, did you notice that?
Yes, I did. She in her remarks, she alluded to the fact, now, this is what's going to happen if a Republican walks into the White House on January 20th. 2017, and she just laid it out right there and drew a stark contrast between, you know, the Democrats and the Republicans. But I thought that was a very strong part of her remarks, and of course, closing it with the "May the Force be with you" thing. Oh, that was politically brilliant. That got the crowd to erupt, and it was great. So, I did notice what you were saying, though.
Okay, Catherine, I asked Tim if he noticed that he did. Do you think that's a winning tactic, Catherine, that narrative?
I do. I think it's an important an important point to make, and since this may be the last debate, it's probably good to make it at this, you know, time. The comment I thought was really good was when the moderator asked her, quoted the Time magazine or something, that said, corporate America loves Hillary, and they said, you know, should Americans love Hillary too or something, and she said, everybody should. I thought that was perfect. Oh. It was very light and you know, sort of charming and flirtatious, but real. So I like that comment too. I thought she was really good in good shape last night. Though I thought what she was wearing was awful, but you know, that's a whole other conversation.
Let's get into that in a second. Now, to me, what she should have done is said, "Hey." And I thought we covered this in 2008. I'm likable enough. But
David,
you know.
David,
go ahead,
don't
Tim.
You think her narrative is wheeling now toward a general election type narrative? Isn't that what you gathered from that last night? Not that she has assumed that she's the nominee, but she is just in the process of wheeling toward that.
Oh, most
well,
definitely.
I think it's important for them. All three of them should be doing that. This is why you should choose me.
The other two have to defeat her. you know, she's, I think, you know, and maybe people could say it's arrogance, but, I mean, she can go ahead and begin to pivot towards, you know, Donald Trump, Ted Cruz, somebody else. And so she can start to make that pivot. And I think that's very important because if you look at it, if you look at the Republicans' agenda, which has never been more far right, and you look at the fact that the likelihood of us winning the House under any scenario is very slim, and it's pretty much nil if we were to lose the presidency. We're certainly not going to win the House back. And if we were to lose the presidency, we're probably not going to win the Senate back. The Republicans
right.
would have unabated access to their agenda. And so, therefore,
right.
you know, people that might say, you know, I agree with Hillary 87% of the time, but I agree with Bernie Sanders 95% of the time. I don't know that that, what is that, 8% is enough to risk the Republicans where you probably agree with them 10% of the time, you know. And so I think that case is a good one. It's a good narrative. And it was smart politics. Now, talking about her outfit, Catherine, I'm surprised you mentioned that. There was this big thing going on, I believe it was on Daily Coast, maybe it was on Jezebel, going back and forth about how people worried about Hillary Clinton's outfit and they don't talk about the men's outfit. So I noticed that in the comments.
Well, I can speak for Bernie Sanders because I'm an old guy. There's no help to be had there, you know. Just saying, Bernie's a brilliant guy. But he's not going to be a looker, okay? That's not going to happen with Bernie. So just discounting him right now, okay?
Well, you know,
trimmed eyebrows is as far as it gets.
Well, men have I'm not trying to be light about it, and I don't think it's that important what they're wearing. But it's a lot easier for men. They can pick out a suit and. You know, they wear a blue suit and a red tie or a patterned tie and a white shirt, and they're done. But women have a little more they could do the same thing, but then they're thought of as being, you know, too masculine or too, you know, whatever. But I just wasn't a fan of what she was wearing last night. I thought it was kind of drab.
Catherine, I want to say something to Tim. So we're saying that you didn't go shopping for a burlap sack today. Is that right?
Well, I don't want to place too much importance on it because I don't think it really matters.
But it matters, but it's not essential.
But I just thought it was drab. I think she can look better. And especially she could look younger, and she should, because Martin O'Malley is quite good looking and quite he casts a very strong his appearance is very strong, I just think she could have worn some color. She could have looked younger and more refreshed. But you know, she's on a tough schedule. I'm not going to really criticize her,
Catherine,
for that.
Catherine, you brought up an important point though. Do women in politics have to unfairly, I guess is the word, walk a fashion tightrope that their
yes.
male counterparts don't have to worry about?
I think, I think there's more expectations on women. I mean, seriously, it's pretty easy for, it's pretty easy for men, right?
Uh-huh.
They can pick out a nice suit. No one really notices if they're wearing the same blue suit to every debate. You know, I mean, because it's a blue suit or a you know gray suit or whatever. But you know, with Hillary and with Carly Fiorina as well. You know, it's always like, oh, she's wearing that red suit. It's not very flattering, or it's too bright red, or you know, what's with that necklace, or, you know, whatever it is that we talk about, because, I mean, that necklace Fiorina was wearing last week was really funny. It was almost exactly the same as a necklace that Tupac Shakur wore. I found a picture of it, almost exactly the same.
Maybe to be fair, particularly on the Republican side, maybe at the next debate they could each pick out an outfit that one of the draftees from the NBA draft wore last year, or probably about during the 90s. It was a lot more fun back then. And then we'd have a much more fun debate with people wearing, like, red pinstripe suits and all. Then we'd have more to talk about the men, right?
Yeah, I mean, I don't like to place too much emphasis on this, but what I'm saying is I think that what you wear does matter. It does make a difference in how you appear, especially for women. It's unfortunate but true.
Well, let's go ahead and move back. Before that, while we were so excited, the data breach. NGP software, they're who does the database. I actually know Nathaniel Perlman, so I kind of felt bad that, you know, he was brought in such a light. But apparently there was a place where other campaigns could look at and access other campaigns' data, because everything's now online. And so, therefore, you access it, which, you know, kind of scary seeing that, you know, we're talking about secure data. You think about other things in life, like bank accounts and whatnot. Well, members of the Sanders campaign, as I understand it, saw this a while back. No one, according to Bernie Sanders, no one did anything with it at that time. Later, they accessed it, and then somebody actually went in there and looked at Hillary Clinton's data, at least one person. I've heard rumors of four. They fired one person. And so the DNC cut off access for a time, and then Bernie Sanders threatened to sue to get access back. Just a really, really big mess. Catherine, I think you talk a lot more to the DNC-type folks, if you will, than maybe Tim and I do in Atlanta. What are some people saying down there?
Well, I've used Van, not through NGP, but through a different port and different access. And, they sign a contract that says they aren't going to do stuff like this. I haven't talked to anybody at the DNC about it, so I can't really comment on that. But they sign a contract saying they're not going to do this. They're not going to – even if the access is available – they're not going to look at anybody else's data. It's sort of an ethical question.
Matter of trust.
Matter of trust, exactly.
Matter of trust.
We have the Democrats have consistently over the past couple cycles had better have used data in a much more sophisticated way because of these online tools. I mean, I think that's – in 2012, we heard a lot about that after the election. So, I think it was perfectly legitimate for them to shut them down until they could figure out whether, you know, how much data had been reviewed and if any data had been downloaded. Because that's the big question, I guess, is did they run reports that they then – save that they could then look at later. And it looks to, from what I've read online today and yesterday, it looks like they did not do that. They did not, like, actually download reports that they could then look at later. They reviewed the data, and then they, you know, so that's kind of a nuanced view, but I think, you know, it sounds like they looked at it. So they shouldn't have done that. I think it was wise of Senator Sanders to fire the person who they know did it. And I assume that if it is revealed that more people did it, that those people will also be fired. I think it does come into – it does – the big problem is with the van, that there is this point at the time that they're syncing data – and updating files, that there is access to all that stuff. So they should either shut the system down during that period, during that syncing, or they need to figure out a better way to do it so that there's never that exposure, it seems to me. I mean, I'm no data wizard, but it seems to me that that's the problem.
Yes. Tim, what are some of your thoughts on it?
Well, you know, I was wondering if the DNC didn't overreact a little bit. The Sanders campaign, you know, fired the offending member. And I just wondered if the DNC took it a step further than they needed to, which, you know, induced a backlash from the Sanders campaign, who apparently was beginning proceedings to sue him. And so I wonder if the DNC made a mistake right there. And it turned, you know, kind of much ado about nothing into something really, really more major than it should have been. And it could have really disrupted the campaign. Thank goodness the candidates, cooler heads prevailed, and the candidates did a very good job of handling that last night, by the way. But I was just wondering what you thought about that, guys. Did you think the DNC overreacted a little bit?
I think the bigger reaction, if you read a lot of the blogs and if you see that Bernie Sanders' campaign raised $1 million off of this, I think a lot of the calls to fire Debbie Wasserman Schultz and the way they got so angry, it's almost like they're saying that, you know, Hillary Clinton controls her and thus controls the DNC. Well, here's the thing. If we all know about politics, and maybe it shouldn't be this way, but at the state party level, if a sitting governor is of that party, they usually get their person in. If the president, you know, you have a sitting Democratic or Republican president, they get their person in charge of the party committee. Basically, that was kind of a de facto attack on President Obama, like your person needs to be fired, or you put Hillary's person in there. You're so weak you can't have your own person, or B, you favor Hillary. Well, I think then you're attacking the president. This guy's not even a Democrat.
Right.
To sue the Democratic National Committee. He's attacking our Democratic president in a roundabout way. I mean, this guy's too far left to me to be running the Democratic primary. I'm to the point where if he wants to go and Ralph Nader this election and go to the far left and run a third-party candidacy, that's probably what he needs to do. Now, we may lose the election because he might get 3 or 4% of, you know, these nut and berry eaters that just want to, that are so far to the left, they're not with the reality of the American electorate. And it's just getting old to me. He's worn out his welcome with me. That's just how I see it.
Am I a little too much off base?
I'm fine.
Well, so I think the problem was that I think they let him run as a Democrat. Like, the DNC probably maybe should have thought about that a little longer, about actually letting him run as a Democrat.
Yeah.
I don't know how that all works. Like, I don't know how it works. Like, do you just declare that you're a Democrat and you can run as a presidential candidate? And I don't know exactly how that process works, but that's what I was saying yesterday.
Thing one, he should have had to switch his affiliation in the United States Senate from I to D. And once he did that, we'll talk. But as long as you have an I in it, your name is senator, you're out.
Perhaps he got by with that because he caucuses with the Democrats. He votes probably, I would say, over 90% of the time exactly like I think I would in the Senate on various issues. And maybe that's it. I don't know.
Yeah, to me, there's at some point you have to, you know, we have these loyalty oaths and all these things that say we're not going to support candidates of another party, and that's just, it gets to that point where he needs to kind of, you know, come along if he's going to get all the privileges of being a Democrat. He needs to go ahead and go all the way.
Well, and the other thing is that the other piece of this is, and I'm not defending the DNC because of this, but Hillary's been doing a lot. The Clinton campaign and Hillary Clinton have been doing a lot for state parties. They've been helping raise money. They've been helping raise money for the DNC. I don't see Bernie Sanders doing that.
Yeah, and Martin O'Malley gave all those staffers in South Carolina when we had some contested races that looked like we could have won down there. I mean, he's been supportive. You know, to me, he maybe this hurts him, because if Bernie Sanders was kind of, you know, seen as not a Democrat, then Martin O'Malley becomes the alternative. So it may hurt him even more than hurts Hillary Clinton with this campaign going on. Well, time is getting away from us, and we've covered just a few things, but let's kind of stick and move. And I wanted to mention what happened pretty much at the start of the week between the Birmingham mayor and a councilman at City Hall. Birmingham Mayor William Bell, now Birmingham, Alabama, is the largest city in Alabama. I mean, this is not a small town. This is, if you pick, say 7 to 10 major cities in the South, Birmingham, probably going to make that list. He and City Councilman Marcus Lundy got into a fight, and they're accusing each other of assault. Charges were filed. Some people were took to jail. They were discussing, city matters. I still have yet to find out what city matters brought them to blows. Tim, I sent you this story right off. You may have read about it in other places. What do you make of this?
This is more than just a disagreement over policy there on the council, between the council and the mayor, and between this councilman and the mayor. There's something a little personal. Obviously, these two, it's gone beyond policy differences, and these two don't like each other. So the mayor was essentially attacked by this councilman who choked him. Really nice. The mayor, as a matter of fact, tried to leave the meeting and was unable to do so, was prevented from doing so by this councilman. I don't know. They got hurt bad enough that they both went to a hospital. The council should have a means to remove a councilman who does stuff like that. I'm sure they do, and I wonder why, if they're going to take measures to do so, because, no matter how you disagree with somebody, you can't let it get physical and get out of hand like that. That's ridiculous.
Yeah, you would think there'd be some decorum rules stated in their city charter, what have you.
Yeah, don't choke the mayor would be one, yeah.
Catherine, are they going to have to play Taylor Swift's Bad Blood when the city council and mayor enter the chambers from now on?
Well, as I said last week, I'm kind of obsessed with Alexander Hamilton these days. So I keep thinking, are we going to go back to the days of duels? Wouldn't that be fun?
These guys sound like they're to that level, but
I know.
You make a great argument about guns. As heated as these two gentlemen got, at least they can live to see another day, unlike the days of duels, because no guns were involved.
Right.
As barbaric as fisticuffs may be, at least nobody dies, So that's the upside of this. But this is really not a good thing for Birmingham. I think a lot of times in the state, people are in the suburb areas look down on Birmingham, probably more so than a lot of other big cities in the South or any part of the country. They're kind of like, what crazy nonsense is going on in Birmingham? And so they're bringing more of this up. And then, of course, people around the South, they go, that's Alabama. And so this situation has just brought more negative light onto the city of Birmingham when nobody would want this. Well, let's continue to kind of be quick about things. Friday night, Bear Grylls and President Obama went to the Alaskan wilderness, walked around for some period of time. It was filmed, they showed us at least about 45 minutes of it, clipped up. But I had no idea that this was even coming on. Luckily, my DVR records everything on primetime, and it said, Running Wild with Bear Grylls. I go, well, we'll see what's on there. The president's on there. Wow, I got to watch this. You know, this better. And so I watched the whole thing. I thought it was fascinating. Showed the president in a new light. But no promotion whatsoever. So there's kind of two things in there. Kim, you watched it. Kind of tell us about what you thought, well, you know, the content of the show.
Yeah, first of all, for anybody who does want to watch it, you can watch the whole show on the Internet without commercials. You know, I really enjoyed it. It was interesting. The president, by the way, has a good sense of humor. He's very good off the cuff on shows like this. It was also very informative. I wish more people would watch things like this. I think it would literally change the minds on something like global warming and stuff like that, which really the ecology was what this was all about last night, going out to a glacier and seeing how it receded and seeing what goes on in the wild. I'm not going to give away a bunch of it, but the president of the United States actually ate a piece of salmon that had been eaten and thrown away by a bear. Now I want you to think about that for a minute. How many presidents are going to do that?
It was pretty tame compared to what bear usually does. Yeah.
Well, And the president was prepared for that and said as much. I've seen some of what he eats on here, and, you know. it was great.
Well, I mean,
I enjoyed it.
Yeah, the president's kids are about the age of my son, and I knew, you know, he loved that show back when it used to come on. Whatever cable channel it used to be on. When it was still fresh and new, and now they've retooled it, and he does interviews. I almost think what we need to do is, you know, on the debate commission, let's have all the debates we're going to have, but then let's give, you know, the two presidential candidates a chance to walk through the woods with Bear. He does a great job interviewing and, you know, getting out of business with him. Catherine, you didn't see it, therefore you're probably in a better place to speak about the total lack of promotion about this show. Catherine, why did no one really know about it?
Well, I watch a lot of TV, let me just say. I watch a lot of trashy TV, I watch a lot of TV. And I didn't know anything about it. Not only that, I don't even know I've never even heard of this show. Like, when I saw your email, I'm like, who is this Bear Grylls? I don't even know how to pronounce
it. Do you not know who Bear Grylls is?
I have no idea. I've never heard of that. I've never seen that name
of the
before.
Show, Catherine, it used to be on cable, and it was called Into the Wild. They would Man versus Wild. They would take him out on a helicopter and just drop him out and tell him, okay, survive and get out. And he's a survival expert. That's what he does. And he would show you how you could live off the land and, you know, I don't know, eat trees or whatever, and actually get out of there if you've got nothing but the clothes on your back. And so it's a very interesting show when you get dropped off in the desert or in the middle of Yellowstone National Park, miles from anywhere, that sort of thing. That's what the premise of the show was.
Sounds good.
Yeah, occasionally he'd have a big celebrity, a big movie star, singer, something like that, but he's never had a president on, obviously. And he picked the right president because this president, you know, he's kind of cut. He's in good shape, so as presidents go, this was the one to have.
Yeah, they didn't do a lot of super strenuous stuff. I mean, obviously, probably every second of the show had to be vetted through both Secret Service and the press office. And Bear Grylls said, you know, like, and he showed all these, you know, black SUVs everywhere. He showed, talked about the snipers on the tree line, probably there to shoot grizzly bears more than, you know, anybody that might have known about this, which I think it was kind of probably totally secretive until after it was shot. They talked about it, that it would show later in the year. And then I'd forgot, like I said, I'd forgotten about it. Bear Grylls, fascinating guy. He was the youngest person to climb Mount Everest. His father was like a British commando. He was in the military. He was in, I guess, what would be like our Green Berets, Navy SEALs, one of those type forces. I think they're called Royal something. He's now, I think, or in the past, he's been the head of the British Boy Scouts. So he's this major league survivalist, very rugged, but he's really pro-environment. He's very religious also, but he's very open-minded when he talks to people. He's had, gay actors that fellow from Modern Family came on with him one time. So he's very open-minded. He's exactly what, if the Christian movement, if you will, politically, were like Bear Grylls, it would be a whole different thing because he's about his faith, but he's not about judging everybody, if you will, or at least that doesn't come through in the show. Because at one point he prays with the president. They discuss religion at one point. The president, speaks about things. So it's really fascinating just the talking they had. At the same time, they were talking about the way the glaciers had gone away.
Imagine this, Catherine, a president and the show's host actually out in the middle of the nowhere talking about drinking your own urine in order to survive. I mean, it was great. It was terrific.
Yeah, well, I mean, the man's drunk his own urine out of a snake skin. So, I mean, drinking your own urine is like, low-level stuff for Bear. You got to put it in like a snake skin he killed, 5 miles down the road. So just a fascinating deal. And like Tim was saying, try to find this thing. Well, it looks like it may be the three of us, which, like I was telling y'all before, that doesn't seem to hurt our ratings, and we thank all our listeners for sticking with us no matter what's going on. So we had some more topics we hadn't gotten to, and, our friend Tom Jensen, who comes on all the time, he did a little polling, and it was, a lot of it was just your basic who's winning this race, and it found that, Donald Trump's, his lead has grown to 41%. But then the thing that everybody wanted to talk about was, I'm sorry, he's not leading 41%. I keep looking at that number. He's, I think he's at 34-18 for Ted Cruz. So his lead did grow. But they looked at a country from the movie Aladdin. That would be the cartoon movie from roughly 20 years ago. Jafar is one of the characters. I think the place they use starts with an A. I'm trying to find it. I'd need a phonetic spelling. Agrabah. Tim is versed in his Aladdin. But they ask, would you want to bomb Agrabah? And, to be fair, I think, wasn't it 18% of Democrats want to bomb Agrabah? But many more Republicans wanted to bomb it. And 41% of Trump voters want to bomb this cartoon place out of existence. They don't care how much pen and ink it takes to get rid of Agrabah if they make an Aladdin 2. Catherine, what did you think of Tom doing this?
I don't know. I kind of don't like those kind of gotcha questions. I mean, I get it. It's kind of, it shows that, I think the idea is to show that, voters aren't very well informed, but I don't know. I mean, I think it's, it's an interesting little tidbit, but what does it really mean? It just means that people jump to conclusions about the name of a country, and I don't know.
Yeah,
I'm not a big fan.
I'm not a big fan
of tricking people.
Well, in fairness, I mean, if somebody called me up and they said, would you bomb, an ISIS stronghold? Yes. Would you bomb an ISIL stronghold? Yes. And right now, that's probably the end of my list. Because right now, Osama bin Laden's been caught. Afghanistan is no longer harboring him. The more you find out about Syria, it's like there's all kinds of folks on all sorts of situations there. It's not like everybody's in ISIS by any means. And so, really, you have, to me, you know, most practical, two good targets. So, therefore, if somebody says, would you bomb, for most will it either be no or I don't know, because I never heard of this place. I don't remember that movie. And so it just shows that there are kind of little hawkish and hair trigger.
I agree, you know, but I'm just not a big fan of tricking people in questions. It's just it is indicative of people who, you know, just want to bomb the heck out of whatever, and I don't like that either. But I don't. It's just.
And I'll say this, and maybe this isn't as much gotcha questioning. I told Roy Barnes pollster after the fact. I said, you know what I would have done? I would have asked those, the voters on the other side. I would say, how many of you want to bring back slavery? Get a number on it. You know, hopefully it's 1%. Okay. But unfortunately, I think it was higher than 1%. I'd be like, who wants to ban interracial marriage? Hopefully it's 1% or lower, but I bet it's more.
But
I would expose people. I have no problem exposing people. Him.
But I was just going to say, Tom occasionally does things like this, like these nuts this year. And the cutest story in the world. Nobody in my sphere of family would know probably who Tom Jensen is, or very few of them would. But I got a picture of me and him that was taken at Georgia Tech by a mutual friend when Carolina came there to play. And at a family Christmas party last week, my nephew's daughter's boyfriend came, and the kid loves politics. He's in high school, right? So he's walking around the room and asking me who all these people are, and I point to this picture of Tom Jensen, tell him, you know, this guy's one of the most famous pollsters in the country, blah, blah, blah. And I mentioned these nuts, and his face lit right up. Oh, yeah, I've heard of this. He actually took out his cell phone and took a picture of my picture so he could show it to his friends, because this is the guy that did the poll with these nuts, and he had heard about it. That people at work with me have talked about it, not knowing that, you know, the story of us knowing Tom Jensen or interviewing him or anything, but they know about that. So maybe sometimes it's kind of a little marketing thing.
I think you're right. It gets
just
attention.
Maybe.
And you know what? If a Republican pollster, you know, Brock McCleary, who's been on the show too, who's Republican, you know, wants to come up with an analogous question for Democrats, and, you know, some people are stupid enough to fall for it, well, then I hate that. But that's just, you know, how it goes. It's kind of like, if y'all seen Lie Witness News on Jimmy Kimmel, they'll talk about, like,
yes.
You know, I think they threw Star Wars names in one time, and they find these people, and they'll just go on and on and on about how, I don't know, Tatooine, they're talking about attacking, or they'll say, hey, have you heard the proposal to have the NBA Finals be 11 games? And, oh, yeah, it'd be longer, but it's nonsense. But any, you know, but they just, they talk about it. It's just like they're so happy to be on TV, I guess. They'll just,
you know, David, there's another thing, too, another thing. Tom Jensen's a damn fine pollster, too. I got to throw that out there. The public policy polling is one of the best and most accurate polls in the country. The guy's really good at what he does. And I guess it's okay if he wants to throw a little levity in it. I thought the thing with these nuts was hilarious. I'm sorry. I know politics can be a serious business, but maybe it gives us the chance every once in a while to just laugh a little bit. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, I guess it just, people need to think, you know, if you're talking about bombing a country, you know, make a little list. Maybe Simple's list is a little longer, but if you've never heard of the place, you know, just need to know more before you say yes.
Do you think it fooled people because it was Arab sounding?
Oh, definitely.
Something like that?
I'm sure. Although, I will tell you what, I do think there are a sliver of people in this country, and probably a lot of countries, that are so hawkish that if you said, hey, would you like to bomb Canada, they'd be for it. Because if, you know, kill them all and let God sort them out or whatever it is, you know, that old, you know, saying. They just, you know, if they want to shoot at them, we'll be for it. So that may be. Well, let's kind of talk about the other part of the poll and the actual, you know, horse race. And it definitely looks like Marco Rubio, the bloom's off the rose. Catherine, what do you think? Do you think Marco Rubio is trending downward?
I do think the bloom's off the rose a little bit with Marco Rubio, but I don't think we can count him out yet. I think we'll see. I think that rose might bloom again, so to speak.
Yeah. Tim, what do you think of the state of the race based on the polling you've seen? You know, this and other ones.
Yeah, well, you know, I agree with Catherine there. Someone is going to have to, at some point, step forward as the establishment option, the strong establishment option. If it's not Rubio, well, who's it going to be? We're still looking at Jeb Bush running in single digits. Although, Dr. Carson, you talk about somebody with the bloom off their rose.
Right.
I mean, he is tanking. You know, the man spoke so softly, I guess people actually started to listen to what he was mumbling, which was, you know, a lot of gibberish. I'm sorry to say, but it's got to be Rubio or Bush, or maybe Chris Christie is going to make a late run. He's starting to ease up just a little bit. And he's going to make his stand, obviously, in New Hampshire. You guys don't think that the establishment is going to finally say, well, Cruz or Trump, which one?
I think it's going to be that. I think it may end up being Cruz. I think there's a sliver of the establishment that has probably just gone, and they're the most conservative Democrats now. And I think, you know, talk radio, the echo chamber has pushed the center of that party so far right that it very well could be Ted Cruz, that is considered the establishment candidate with Donald Trump as the alternative. I will tell you all this, though. I, as a viewer of Saturday Night Live and what Jay Pharoah is doing as Ben Carson the past few weeks, I hope Ben Carson stays in this race to the bitter end. I hope he runs as a third-party candidate. I hope he gets his own TV show on Fox or CBN or wherever else they'll give him a show so Jay Pharoah can continue to play him on TV. It is by far funnier than every other political thing they do. Have y'all seen Jay Pharoah as Ben Carson?
I haven't. I don't
watch
Saturday Night Live.
Yes, I have. He's funny.
Do y'all not
think
it's
good.
The funniest thing? It is.
Yeah.
And I'm not even sure if he's doing Ben Carson anymore, because Ben Carson's coming off really effeminate, which I know he's super low energy. I don't know what he's doing, but it's just hysterical. And last night they had the mock debate, and nothing else compared to what they were doing there until Donald Trump said, you know, when somebody said, does somebody think this guy's going to be president? And he goes, look, face it, none of us are going to be president. I thought that was pretty funny, too, when they did that. Well, looking at the poll, you know, Donald Trump, he's just not going away. I think he may, if he doesn't win it, he's going to be in it till the end. I mean, I think a lot of people thought he would get out earlier and earlier. Do y'all think he's in it for the long haul at this point?
Well, here's what I think about Donald Trump. I think he got into this as a folly. You know, yeah, I'm going to run for president, blah, blah. I mean, I don't know. I don't know the dude, but it seems like this was a folly. Like, I'm going to show them. I'm going to, you know, get some good numbers. But I think now he might be going, wait a second. I don't have time to be president. I don't really want to be president. I just wanted to give this is just a little, you know, fun for me. So I'm wondering if he's looking for an escape hatch.
I don't see how he can do it at this point. I mean, he's gone so far. He's done so well. And it may be a pride thing for him, you know, at this point. You know, we'll see, Tim.
Yeah, well, there's a couple of things here to look at. Number one, obviously terrorism has changed that race some, and it has actually boosted a guy like Donald Trump, who gets out there and hollers, well, I'll bomb the hell out of everybody, and a guy like Ted Cruz that says, I want to see if sand glows, you know, at night and stuff like that. So it's helped those two guys, and the people that are being more pragmatic are not really catching fire right now, simply because the electorate they're dealing with is a very angry bunch of people. They came into this thing angry. One reason they've been so angry is that, you know, the present president defeated them twice and just stoked their anger. And, of course, some of the things this president has done has stoked their anger even more. And they're ready to lash out somewhere. They're ready to bomb something. At least they're saying, well, I don't know how many people I've heard say, well, at least Trump is talking about things I want to hear about. Haven't y'all heard that?
Mm-hmm.
I hadn't, but I could see it. And that really says, and yeah, knowing what Donald Trump talks about, that really seems like they're missing the mark on their life, because
yeah,
he's not
I
talking
heard
a lot about jobs, education,
game,
health care. Oh, yeah.
You know,
getting the people that don't look like us, keeping them out with the wall. I know. I mean,
yeah, I heard that at a college football game. Now, the other thing about Donald Trump, I still wonder what would happen if, say, he lost Iowa. And that could really, really happen. Look at Iowa's voting history. Years ago, Pat Robertson finished second in their primary there. 2008, Mike Huckabee jumped up, won it. Rick Santorum won it 4 years ago. They have a huge, huge number of evangelicals that vote in their primary. And that figures to favor a guy like Cruz, who I think could slip by Trump and win the Iowa caucuses. If Trump's coat of invincibility is torn, what then? Would he go into free fall? How would he?
I'll say this. Yeah, I do think this. I think if he were to finish a strong second, he'll be okay. He can't just fall apart in Iowa and then, you know, that national lead will go away elsewhere. And you do have to think. I think you're right about the evangelicals. Cruz is going to get a decent amount, but you have to think that Carson, Huckabee, and Santorum still are kind of fighting for that vote. One of the three of them is going to outpace their poll numbers. I still think it could be Carson at this point. But one of the three of them is going to surprise, because the other two are nowhere in the poll.
Catherine and I disagree with you on Dr. Carson.
I think Carson's like,
I believe he's Cruz just has stolen his thunder.
Yeah,
I have
a question for you.
Go ahead.
So I was talking to a friend the other night whose mother is very conservative. She's a birther, you know, she's like all that and more. And she told her daughter that she wouldn't vote for Hillary Clinton. And if Hillary Clinton got the nomination,
she was born in Kenya?
She would vote for Trump. But if Bernie Sanders got the nomination, she would vote for Bernie Sanders. So, I mean, I can kind of understand a voter who says, yeah, I could vote for Trump or I could vote for Bernie Sanders. But is that like, I mean, it's kind of crazy, right? Is it just because they're both sort of the extreme of their, you know, they're like both the extreme. So, you know, they're both kind of rebellious, and they, you know, people like to say that they, you know, speak their mind. And I mean, do you think that's a, I mean, are there people that won't vote for Hillary but would vote?
I think,
I don't know. I just thought it was a really interesting
scenario. There's a narrative,
scenario.
I think, of Hillary Clinton, you know, the old right-wing, you know, plot against her that, you know, wanted to make a narrative up about her. I think that there's so much of that that's happened that that's turned some people off to Hillary Clinton on a personal level. What I do find kind of crazy, and Catherine, I'm going to, well, actually, I'll let Tim answer, and I'm going to ask you a different question. Tim?
Well, I was going to ask Catherine this. Catherine, your friend, do you think she was drawn to Bernie Sanders and to Trump because they're outsiders, and somebody like Hillary is anathema because she's an insider, just like old, say, Jeb Bush? And she
That's
would lump
what I think,
the insiders
but
together.
What's more insider than a U.S. senator?
But she – but
I mean, even though he is
–
even though he is,
people
like, an independent or whatever,
outside,
but...
Right? People do still view Bernie Sanders as an outsider trying to break into the good old boy system, running a very unorthodox campaign like Ted Cruz. Even though he's a U.S. senator, he's viewed as an outsider. So I wonder if your friend is doing the insider-outsider game.
Yeah, that's what I think there's probably something to that. I just thought it was an interesting, like, when she told me that, I was like, well, okay, whatever. What were you going to say, David?
Yeah, I want to ask you another question, Catherine. I think we'll have plenty of time to discuss this, and I'm going to bring it up tonight, and then we'll move on from the show. You know, back in 2008, there were a lot of African-Americans that leaned Republican, you know, voted for different Republicans in the past, you know, appreciated the legacy of Ronald Reagan, but they voted for President Obama because it was a chance to make history and break down a wall that I think a lot of folks didn't think would come anywhere near that soon. Kevin Ross, you know, Judge Kevin Ross, friend of the show that's been on with us, he fits in that mold. He's told me back when we were on our show together. I get the sense that there are a lot more women that don't think that way, that they don't see this as tearing down this, you know, historical, or I guess a way, erecting this historical landmark by electing the first female as president. Why is that so? You got 2 minutes to answer. Catherine, I tell you what, if you can't answer tonight, that's okay. We can save that question because I have a feeling we have from now until next November to discuss it.
Yeah, well, I think we should all be, I don't know why it's just me that has to answer that.
No, but I'm just saying, well, I mean, it's just like if, let's say that Hillary had won in 2008 and it was Barack Obama and we had African-American on the show. I mean, it would be, I think, I mean, Tim and I could have our own opinion, but I think your opinion is maybe a little more interesting. And so it's something we definitely can discuss in the future. Another thing for the future, and I just want you to have his homework for our listeners. If you hadn't seen Project 538's tool they've put together where you can look at college-educated white, non-college-educated white, black, Hispanic, Latino, and Asian, and you can play with the turnout and the percentage of the Democratic Republican vote and see where these states will flip. Just a fascinating tool. Highly recommend you Google it, work around with it. Tim, you got a comment on it?
Yeah, I did it. And I did things like, you know, the Asian vote is jumping, so I adjusted that, and I made some more adjustments. And all these adjustments I made, all I came up with was the state of North Carolina flipping. Everything else stayed as it was.
Yeah. Well, I tell you, the one you move, if you move the college-educated white and the non-college-educated white, which is probably going to be harder to move, you flip things faster because it's a bigger percentage of the vote in a lot of these states. And so, therefore, it's, you know.
Well, it ain't just nationally. It's where these votes are located. It's like the Hispanic vote is so concentrated in California and Texas, for instance. And those two states are not going to flip no matter what you do. It's that kind of thing you got to deal with, too. So,
well, we'll go deeper into this tool as time goes on. And I wish they'd break it down almost where you could pull up an individual state and kind of look at it, maybe in areas or something. And maybe that's planned. Well, guys, a show with just us, a little false advertising, and I'll try to get to the bottom of that. But been a good show, and we hope everybody has a good Christmas because we're going to be on again after the holiday.
Yeah. Good night,
y'all.
Guys.
Good night, everybody.